This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. Good morning. You're listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, here in Portland, Oregon, USA. My name is Andrew Geller, and it was confusing figuring out what was going to happen today. There was a program that I was intending on doing, and because many of the guests that I thought of approaching were actually tracking things going on today back in Washington, I decided to put that program off, although we will have an update on the issue towards the end of the hour, or half hour. So I'm going to do a sampling of news. Haven't done a news show in a couple of months. Many things have happened, a lot of which is just too old to mention, and hopefully many of you have already heard about a wide range of independent information on these topics and others. So there's a new piece from famed historian Howard Zinn in the April issue of the Progressive magazine called America's Blinders. And he asks, how come so many people were so easily fooled in the context of the lies from the Bush administration regarding military activities they've undertaken in the past 5 years? And he says the question is important because it might help us understand why Americans rushed to declare their support as Bush was sending troops halfway around the world. He feels as though there are two reasons which go deep into our national culture and which help explain the vulnerability of the press and of the citizenry to outrageous lies. One is the dimension of time, or more appropriately, as he puts it, an absence of historical perspective. And the other is the dimension of space, or more appropriately, an inability to think outside of the boundaries of nationalism. He continues, we are penned in by the arrogant idea that this country is the center of the universe, exceptionally virtuous, admirable, superior. If we don't know history, then we are already meat for carnivorous politicians and the intellectuals and journalists who supply the carving knives. I'm not speaking of the history we learned in school, a history subservient to political leaders. I mean a history that is honest about our past. I'd refer people to truthout.org or the Progressive magazine online. I don't think it's progressive.org, but you can look it up online. That's Howard Zinn in the April 2006 issue. As often, with very appropriate and pointed questions and commentary. And along those lines, let's do a little update on some things connected to those military actions in the past year, 5 years. This is from Tuesday's New York Times. The U.S. Army plans to charge Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Jordan, the former head of the interrogation center at Abu Ghraib prison, with dereliction of duty, lying to investigators, and conduct unbecoming an officer. He would be the highest-ranked officer at Abu Ghraib to face criminal charges in connection with the abuses at the prison. 10 lower-ranking soldiers have already been convicted on a variety of charges. To date, the highest-ranking officer convicted in relation to any of the prisoner abuses in Iraq and Afghanistan is Army Captain Sean Martin, who was found guilty in March of kicking detainees and staging the mock execution of a prisoner. He was sentenced to 45 days in jail and fined $12,000. Other more senior officers have been reprimanded, fined, and relieved of command. I believe the highest ranking of them being former General Janet Karpinski. Colonel Jordan was the director of the Joint Interrogation and Debriefing Center at Abu Ghraib from the time it was established in September 2003 to December 2003. By his own account, Jordan was ill-equipped to oversee the interrogations task force at Abu Ghraib. He was a civil affairs officer by training, and his assignment had been to set up a database at the interrogation center for tracking information gleaned from prisoners. Colonel Jordan told Major General Antonia Taguba, a senior Army investigator, quote, "I have no training on the military side of what constitutes interrogations operations." And there's more on that if you were to do a search for Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Jordan and Abu Ghraib. This from just a couple of hours ago, Wednesday morning. The CIA has conducted more than 1,000 undeclared flights over European territory since 2001, European Parliament investigators said today in a preliminary report. These flights were a clear violation of an international treaty. The investigators also said that incidents when terror suspects were handed over to U.S. agents did not appear to be isolated, and that the suspects were often transported by the same planes and groups of people. The information for this report was gathered during 3 months of hearings and more than 50 hours of testimony by individuals who said they were kidnapped and tortured by U.S. agents, EU officials, and rights groups. That's actually written kind of awkwardly. I think that's supposed to say according to EU officials and rights groups. The information gathered was provided by Eurocontrol, the EU's air safety agency. Data showed that CIA planes made numerous stopovers on European territory that were never declared, violating an international air treaty that requires airlines to declare the route and stopovers for planes with a police mission, according to Italian lawmaker Giovanni Claudio Fava, who drafted the report. It's from the Associated Press. And we have a little bit more news on the Valerie Plame leak case, apparently, possibly at the moment. White House aide Karl Rove is testifying today before a federal grand jury for the fifth time. He was seen consulting with his lawyers earlier today. Oh, I guess he's talking in the afternoon, so maybe it hasn't happened quite yet. He will be apparently answering questions before the grand jury regarding evidence that has emerged since his last grand jury appearance last fall, according to someone speaking on condition of anonymity because of grand jury secrecy rules. That new evidence includes information that emerged that Rove's attorney had conversations with Time magazine reporter Viveka Novak during a critical time in the case. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald met with the grand jury today. And among other things he's investigating is why Rove originally failed to disclose to prosecutors that he had talked to Time magazine reporter Matt Cooper, about the outed CIA operative Valerie Plame back in 2003. Rove said he had forgotten about the Cooper conversation, which occurred several days before Plame's identity was revealed in a column by Robert Novak. So keep your ears pierced for Karl Rove and the grand jury investigation. Undoubtedly, there will be news about that later today, Wednesday. There's a piece in the Asia Times online by Pepe Escobar in his regular column, The Roving Eye, called What's Really Happening in Tehran? And I'm going to read a little bit of this here. It's a rather long piece. You can find it online at atimes.com. That's A-T-I-M-E-S.com. Pepe Escobar. Do a search on their engine and the page will come up. Because of the opacity of Iran's theocratic nationalism, outsiders may be tempted to assume that the official Iranian position is the one expressed last week in Baku, Azerbaijan, by Defense Minister Mostafa Mohammad Najjar. Quote, the United States has been threatening Iran for 27 years, and this is not new for us. Therefore, we are never afraid of U.S. threats. George W. Bush and other U.S. administration officials frequently said, quote, all options are on the table, end quote, with regard to Iran's nuclear program, which the U.S. suspects is designed to develop nuclear weapons. Last month, the U.N. Security Council passed a statement asking Atomic Energy Agency head Mohammed El-Baradei to report simultaneously to the Council and the IAEA board by April 28th, that's Friday, on whether Iran had halted enriching uranium. Javad Zarif, the Iranian ambassador to the UN, has repeatedly relayed the official position. Iran's nuclear program is peaceful. There is no proof of a military development. The religious leadership opposes atomic weapons, and Iran has not invaded or attacked any nation in the past 250 years. Is this all there really is? Not really. As some Iranian analysts and ministry officials have told Asia Times Online in Tehran off the record, there are reasons to believe the leadership is misreading an avalanche of U.S. signs related to the military and psychological preparation for a possible war. For instance, fundamental Christians in the U.S. who support Zionism for theological reasons unleashed a ferocious media campaign depicting Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as the Antichrist who wants to destroy Jerusalem and prevent Jesus' comeback. At Monday's press conference, Ahmadinejad, asked about possible military strikes, smiled broadly and dismissed the notion. Military attacks? On what pretext, he asked, adding that Iran was strong and could defend itself. But what if the Bush administration and the Ahmadinejad presidency were bluffing each other into a nuclear war? The key question is which Iranian leadership will have the final say. Pepe Escobar writes that there are at least four main factions in the complex Iranian game of power politics. The first being the extreme right, closely aligned with the beginning, from the beginning to the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. The second faction is comprised primarily of provincial clerics, whose master is the supreme leader himself. The third is the left, initially former partisans of the son of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, Ahmed Khomeini, who died in mysterious circumstances in the 1990s. And lastly, he describes the most unpredictable faction is former Iranian president Rafsanjani. Right. More on this piece, again, atimes.com by Pepe Escobar, What's Really Happening in Tehran? And all that news made possible by the attacks of September 11, 2001 and the subsequent hijacking of a long history of U.S. foreign policy. There's a large update available on the 9/11 timeline at cooperativeresearch.org, maintained primarily by Paul Thompson, author of The Terror Timeline. Go and check that out, www.cooperativeresearch.org. You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO here in Portland, Oregon. Take a real quick music break here and have some news about the environment and greenhouse gases and cars and oil. Stay tuned. Thank you. little music there by Christine Gunn off her fantastic CD, Voice of a Tree. Some of you may know her as one-third of Trillion Green. You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. My name's Andrew Geller, getting back into the tail half of a news program this week. And it was Earth Day last week sometime. I guess it was celebrated on the weekend. Just prior to Earth Day, the Environmental Protection Agency very quietly released the 2006 greenhouse gas inventory for the United States, which goes up through the year 2004 because of the time lag involved in compiling data and everything. So the big news is that the United States just set again a new record, as it pretty much does every single year in terms of its greenhouse gas emissions. 85% of all those greenhouse gas emissions are from carbon dioxide. 94% of that carbon dioxide that's released is from the burning of fossil fuels. Coal, primarily, and then oil and methane. Of the fossil fuel combustion releasing carbon dioxide, about one-third of it was from transportation, mostly cars, some trucks. Just under 30% was from industrial activity. Just under 20% was from commercial activity. And residential was responsible for about 20% of CO2 released due to fossil fuel combustion. The report includes the year 1990 as a benchmark in much of its reporting, 1990 being the year stipulated that greenhouse gas emissions emission reductions would be tied to in the Kyoto Greenhouse Gas Treaty. But the U.S. hasn't signed it, and in fact, the Bush administration fully pulled out of it. In the past 15 years, since 1990, greenhouse gas emissions are up 20%. Methane emissions are down about 10%. Nitrous oxide emissions are down just a couple percent, but overall, the United States has released 16% more greenhouse gases in 2004 than it did in 1990. And this doesn't bode all that well in the context of the planet's atmosphere. The World Resources Institute in March released a fantastic issue brief called Climate Science 2005 Major New Discoveries. It's maybe, 12 or 14 pages, and it is very easily broken down in outline format. And I would recommend that you go to www.wri.org and read through the Climate Science 2005 issue brief there. Many things related to the cryosphere, the frozen world, terrestrial warming, ocean warming, future predictions, the Atlantic conveyor, hurricane intensity, and lots of other stuff. There is a report out. Oh, who did I pull this from? I didn't write that down. Unbelievable. Anyway, there is a report out called Season Creep: How Global Warming is Already Affecting the World Around Us. And maybe I can pull this up real quick here, because I'd like you to know the resource to get your own copy. All right, well, if you just... Oh, right. Clearthear.org. is the organization that put this report out. Season Creep, How Global Warming is Already Affecting the World Around Us, An Analysis of the Impact of Climate Change on Seasonal Cycles. Quoting and paraphrasing from the text, according to the latest scientific studies reviewed for this paper, the planet is warming and higher temperatures are disrupting seasons and turning key indicators upside down. Only peer-reviewed studies published in scientific journals are included in this report. The results are clear. Hundreds of species are changing their patterns in response to global warming. And as examples, they're noting about blooms happening earlier, birds returning earlier, plants emerging earlier, frogs coming out and mating earlier, the marine food chain being disrupted as plankton blooms arrive earlier, spring snowmelt happening earlier, longer growing seasons, and later freezes and earlier thaws across the northern hemisphere. And you think, well, great, I like having flowers earlier in the season. And if you live in a place where it freezes a lot, you might think, yeah, that ice sure is a pain. I wish there was less of it. The relation between climate and periodic biological phenomena is a field of science called phenology, phenology. I find it fascinating, and if you're interested in the timing of climate and biological phenomena, check out phenology online. And the issue of phenology is important regarding season creep because if, for example, you are, say, a bird returning from migration from a faraway distance and you're planning on arriving in the location your species always has for spring feeding on a type of insect or multiple types of insects that emerge as the thaw happens or other indicators trigger the insect larva to start doing their thing, the shift in that can mean that the insects are there and the birds aren't, and when the birds show up, the insect larva aren't there to eat, and there have been some small-scale die-offs associated, actually, with animals not being able to locate the prey that they've always subsisted on at a certain time of year. Going back to the text, in a recent study titled Fingerprints of Global Warming on Wild Animals and Plants by Stanford University scientist Terry Root and others, researchers examined the spring phenology of 130 species in the Northern Hemisphere and found that the first signs of spring are appearing nearly 10 days earlier on average compared to 30 years ago. The researchers overlaid temperature data that shows the contribution of human-caused global warming to changes in plant and animal behavior. Root says that this rapid global environmental change is outpacing species adaptation. Another recent meta-analysis by Terry Root of 143 previously published studies reveals a consistent temperature-related shift, or fingerprint, in a number of species, everything from mollusks to mammals, grasses to trees. More than 80% of the 1,400 plant and animal species studied show a trend toward earlier seasonal events. On average, trees bud, frogs mate, and birds nest over a week earlier than they did 50 years ago. And this report, Season Creep, from cleartheair.org, has fairly extensive endnotes given the length of the report, and you can go and check out a lot of those source documents in the endnotes online. Just want to relay a little bit of information that relates to the immigration debate so prevalent in the media now. This is from worldpress.org yesterday, Tuesday the 25th. Mexico, oil depletion and illegal U.S. immigration. Mexico's oil industry is in large part a direct reflection of the country's economic well-being. As those who have been following global oil output are aware, production in Mexico has started to wane and just might decline very rapidly. Since the Mexican federal budget depends very heavily on oil revenues, the country may be faced with some tough economic times ahead, leading to increased pressure among its citizens to possibly migrate north. The giant Cantarell oil field lies deep under the water of the Gulf of Mexico, but in financial terms, it is astride the entire nation of Mexico. Since its discovery in 1976, it has been the mainstay of the country's oil production, accounting for nearly 60% of total production of 3.3 million barrels a day. 60% of that the Mexican government takes from the revenues by the state oil company Petróleos Mexicanos, or Pemex, in taxes every year. Thus, the government relies heavily on oil production to support its national economy. Mexico's energy sector lacks diversification and is thus very vulnerable to sudden fluctuations in production. Increasingly, news reports are filtering out that the largest, most indispensable oil field in Mexico may have already seen its best days. According to Venezuela's Daily Journal, March 30, 2006, quote, Pemex is now seeking to replace output at Cantarell, which contained 35 billion barrels of oil when discovered in 1976. The field peaked in production at more than 2 million barrels a day in 2005 and will decline by 30% per day by the end of 2008, according to a Pemex forecast. David Shields, an independent energy analyst in Mexico City, said, quote, it's hard to compensate for a supergiant field with something much less than a supergiant field. And there is more about oil depletion in Mexico at worldpress.org. This is an article yesterday called Mexico, Oil Depletion and Illegal U.S. Immigration. And lastly, I just want to note, because I'm a bicyclist, and this is an issue I face at least twice a day. This is from a CNN article online last Friday. Distracted drivers are dangerous. A new study says that drivers distracted by attempting other activities such as cell phone use, eating, or anything else, pulling their view from the front of their car are as likely to be involved in a crash, are three times more likely to be involved in a crash as more attentive motorists. The study tracked drivers with video cameras and sensors and offered evidence that inattentive driving causes accidents and young drivers are more likely to have such crashes. Almost 80% of crashes and 65% of near crashes happen within 3 seconds of some form of driver distraction, according to a report by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute. Two different research groups monitored 241 drivers in 100 vehicles for over 1 year. 2 million miles of driving were included in the study. There were 82 crashes and 761 near crashes. Reaching for a moving object multiplied the risk of a crash or near crash by 9 times. Reading, applying makeup, or dialing a handheld device tripled the risk. Using cell phones was the most common distraction for drivers, according to the study. And I think we'll just leave that there. You can go to the CNN.com website and look up distracted drivers. That's going to do it for me today. If you have comments about any of the articles you heard about today or anything on a previous show of mine, feel free to send email to kboo@riseup.net. You can also send regular paper mail here to me at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, USA. I suppose the zip code in there is 97214. And my name is Andrew Geller, for those of you who missed it earlier. Thank you very much for listening to the program. And coming up next, Aaron Yankee and Icky A. interview experimental filmmaker Bill Daniel about his documentary film, Who is Bozo Texino?, which will show as part of the PDX Film Fest at 11, coming up, Democracy Now!, Nat Hentoff from The Village Voice, journalist, Daniel Ellsberg discussing the Valerie Plame leak, and a new report from Greenpeace claims the consequences of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant disaster could top 1 million cancer cases, with nearly 100,000 of them fatal. Stay tuned for all that. Aaron Yankee and Icky A after this brief announcement.